Yes! Yeah, I'm still here, boys and girls. Made it through the holidays. Guess what, you lucky little devils, you. You know, it's Fish and Frank. Yes, yeah, so, you know, ships at sea. Dot, 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 dash, all that kind of stuff. Fish and Frank show again. It's Fish and Frank here, you lucky little people. We've got Robert in the chair across from me. Yes, see, now that's the people up in the bleachers. You know, people react like that when they can't get good seats. If they can't get in the first 10 or 15 rows, they act that way. I don't know what that's about. How's it going, Robert? Happy New Year. It's 2018. I can't believe it's true.
It's kind of scary how quick it went by this year.
I remember celebrating the bicentennial. 1976, big party, playing this massive club, and I gotta tell you, it seemed like in 2000 we'd be living in these modular things under the sea and flying cars and all that. Now all I want them to do is bring on the self-driving cars, because driving from our store at Port Charlotte down at Fish and Frank's up here in Northport to the WKDW studios, and you learn, people should have a car driving for them. They should not be driving it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for the most part.
Well, they could play on their phones and watch videos and, I don't know, doodle themselves or whatever it is they do while they're not concentrating on driving, because they're doing all kinds of other stuff. They definitely don't think about driving. So bring on the self-driving cars. I'm all for it. I hated the idea. I love it now. I think that everybody but me should have a self-driving car.
That's kind of selfish, though.
No, I'm too cheap. If they give me one, I'll be happy to do it. I could just ride along. If I can put the boat behind a self-driving pickup, I'm all in. If the self-driving pickup will take me there. Because, I mean, what the heck? I could read a book, I like Westerns. I like, reading Westerns. That would be good to do while the car drives me along. Right. But we're talking about fishing. This is a fishing show. Don't you forget it. This is a fishing show, Robert. Why don't you get on topic?
Okay. I will try to do that.
I can't have you going off topic like this constantly. You're going to have to straighten up, buddy.
Yeah, I know. It's a little difficult to do that with me. Bring in the reins a little bit.
He's like herding the cats. You just can't keep abreast of what's going on. And speaking of all that, I guess the big news, obviously, is the cold weather. The big difference, last year we had no freezes. And if you go back 2014, 15, 16, 17, and now here we are in 2018, the one big thing I hear a lot of, and I mean, I hear this all the time, and well, last year I went there and I caught fish there, and this year it sucks because there's no fish there. Well, those fish might be a half a mile over or out in deeper water or somewhere else. The funniest part about it is nobody gave fish a calendar.
They gave them one. It's just different than ours.
Well, no, not really, because ours has January, February, March, April, all the way around December. And fish, they know if it's colder or warmer. So back in 2006, was it 16 or 15, we had that flooding January. What's that?
15.
2015, the Peace River was like at a foot above flood stage in January. That's something I had never seen before.
New.
I'd never seen. Usually, right now, the Peace River in Arcadia is at 2 feet. We're running about 235 cubic feet of fresh water per second down the Peace River. And that rainwater coming down the Peace River is essential for us to keep the red tide at bay. Right now, the only thing that stops red tide is fresh water.
Right.
But that Peace River needs to come up. It did come up a little bit with the rains, but the temperature, we'll get more into red tide in a minute, but the temperature right now in the Gulf of Mexico is 70 degrees in Key West, and average temperature is 69 degrees.
Okay.
So not bad.
Kind of right on track with Key West.
Key West is right there. Naples 62.1 degrees. It's supposed to be 66.4 or 66 degrees. So we're looking at 4 or 5 degrees lower than average.
Right.
And that's going to drop more in the next day. How much do you think the next 2 nights with freezing is going to bring that down?
I think, honestly, with the way the winds are with the full moon and the low tides, it's going to be, I think over the next 5 days, we're probably going to see a good 6 to 10 degree cooler water temperature.
You think that much?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think so. I'm gonna give it another 3 or 4 degrees maybe because it's clear skies, lots of sunshine.
Yeah, you got a point.
So
there.
If we were going to have this cloudy weather, because the cloudy weather drops the water temperature almost as much as the cold air temperature does.
Right.
The wind and cold air really drop that temperature down. But if you have all day of bright sunny sunshine beating on that solar radiation hitting the water, that warms it up. And it can almost wash itself out. But if you have the cloud cover where you don't have the beating sun on it, I would go along with your 6, maybe even 8 or 10 degrees more. You know, if we were going to have heavy cloud cover the next day, freezing temperatures, I'd say we'd drop maybe even 10 degrees.
Yeah.
But with the bright sunshine, I don't know if I'm going to give you 6 on that or not.
We'll see in a couple days.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Pensacola is a big one. Pensacola is 49.6 degrees. It's supposed to be 56. That is going to drive some fish back down towards us. And we share fish from the Keys all the way up to Pensacola. The triple tail, cobia, king mackerel, Spanish mackerel, all these fish go up and down the coastline from Pensacola, the big panhandle area, all the way down to the Keys. And these fish follow those water temperatures back and forth.
Right.
So 68 to 72 is prime king mackerel temperatures. It's too cold for them. They're going to be coming back down here. Right now, we're sitting at 60. So I think they're going to go south of us. I think those king mackerel are pushing all the way down to the Keys, down where they're hitting at 70 degrees. But I think if the wind calms down a little bit, I think we could get a few of them while they're migrating south.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I think there's going to be a few slow stragglers that are going to be going by.
Yeah, we're going to see some stragglers as those king mackerel are going south. I think the cobia are going to be headed south. I'm looking at possibly triple tail. Now, any idea what favorite temperature for a triple tail is?
No, not really. I have no idea, to be honest.
So usually they show up in their best numbers around January, so I'm going to say that cooler temperatures, that 70-degree type thing. I know Spanish mackerel like it a little warmer. But
yeah, they're usually in the mid to upper 70s.
So, but I think those triple tail are pushing south. And when this goes, now if history, and history does nothing, I mean, you cannot really extrapolate from history because of the way things are today. We've got so many anomalies. I mean, look at the last election. Look at... we have flooding in January, not flooding in January. We've got everything going on. But if history is any indication weather-wise, whenever we get a hard cold 2 weeks of January, we're going to get a very warm bubble for the last 2 weeks of January, and then February is going to drop like a brick again.
Yeah, I can see that.
That is what should happen.
Yeah.
That's what should happen. Now, with February dropping, you know, if it's going to get warm in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to call for some of the best fishing of the year. Water's cold. It's clear. Got a lot of sediment out of it. High oxygen levels. This is going to bring the fishing on tremendously.
Yeah. I mean, especially some of our really key wintertime species like the trout and the sheep's head.
Yeah, I think
those fish really, truly enjoy the cold weather, so I think we'll start to see them in more consistent numbers.
I think that that's going to be a big deal for as far as that. We got what I've been looking around for. Yeah, I guess that was the water falling.
Something.
That was, I think, the tide going out. That's what that was. That was the wind pushing the tide out. And I think our big thing now, with that kind of sound effect, you got to go to doing a Lewis and Clark exploring. We need some hillbilly music here. This was that, but that's pre-hillbilly. It was like before hillbillies were invented. Lewis and Clark. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, doing a Lewis and Clark. Winds out of the northeast, blowing like they have been at 20 miles an hour. And what's the difference between going out right now? You're gonna see stuff. I think it's Irma is the big reason that doing Lewis and Clark would be the good thing.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Irma changed some of the contours of the harbor a little bit as far as some of the sandbars go, some of the silt and sediment that's been out there. You know, that all got washed out. I mean, the entire harbor got drained and then filled right back up in hours.
So there's
you can't move
there's no hole in the south end of the Mica Cutoff. The sandbar's different going out in Hog Island. And I think some of the bars on the west side and some of the bottom feature on the west side is going to have changed from Trout Creek down about halfway. I don't know how much changed around Cape Hayes, but it's possible that sandbar took quite a bit of influence off that. I wonder if it deepened the holes out there. Now, doing a Lewis and Clark, and the reason we call it that is they were two of the best or greatest explorers we had. They charted out the whole thing from New Orleans, Louisiana, all the way on up through to the north. I mean, a big section of the country was that...
basically west of the Mississippi.
Yeah, west of the Mississippi. That was the reason Andrew Jackson was such a great president. If he hadn't stopped the British in New Orleans, the U.S. would only go from the east coast of the United States to the Mississippi. The British would have had the rest of it. But Andrew Jackson stopped them in New Orleans. They never got into Louisiana at all. He crushed them. He was pretty crazy. I mean, handful of people, and he swapped out the biggest army in the world at that time. So Lewis and Clark, very famous explorers.
Yeah.
What does it mean here to do a Lewis and Clark? What do you need to have an effective Lewis and Clark?
Basically, because the tides are super low this time, you know, with the conjunction of the cold front blowing out of the northeast, the normal wintertime low tides, and on top of this full moon, you've got like the perfect deal for low water situations.
You're good.
So... you know, this is when your sandbars will be exposed, your mangrove roots will be exposed.
What's coming on now is Charlotte Harbor has a north-south kind of layout to it. Port Charlotte and everything up by the north end, Pine Island down at the south end.
Uh-huh.
But all of our passes are on the southwest, south and southwest side of Charlotte Harbor.
Yes.
So when the wind blows out of the north, and particularly out of the northeast... when you have that happening, the water is being pushed out of the passes. And it's kind of like taking a garden hose and running water up a driveway. As soon as you release the pressure, all that water falls down the driveway. You know, anytime you're going up a slope.
Correct.
But when that wind's blowing out of the northeast, it pushes the water out of those all the little passes. Sanibel, Ponderosa.
Captiva.
Captiva, Redfish. Well, it's Captiva, Redfish, I'm sorry, it's Ponderosa, Redfish, Captiva, Boca Grande, Little Gasparilla, and they all line that bottom area. As that water's being pushed out, when the tide tries to come in, it can't get back in. That water, the wind is keeping it forced out.
Right.
So as that wind's forcing the water out, it can't get back in, so the tide drops even lower again. Then the outgoing tide goes, and that water's being pushed out from gravity, and then the wind accelerates that. It gets even lower, and then the tide tries to come in. The wind stops it, won't let it come in, and the tide gets lower again.
Right.
So if you're running around and in the harbor, what's the difference from the tides at this time of year to what they would be in, like, July?
Almost 2 feet of water difference.
I'd say a solid foot anyway. I'm going to say a foot. But if it's 12 more inches of water on the average in summertime than you have now, and then add northeast wind to it, that's where you get that. The other day it was 4 feet below normal.
Oh, yeah.
maybe five.
It was one of the lowest tides I've seen in several years.
If you could have got out that day, you could go along the outside of the sandbars around the harbor and literally with a pair of binoculars take and look across the flats. If you see water there, that would have been a deeper hole. And any place where you saw sand, you know, is the shallow spots. You know, right. That's your average bottom. But what you're doing is looking for holes. Where are the potholes on the east side? Where are the potholes along the west side on the flats? Or Gasparilla Sound. I mean, to be able to get out of Gasparilla Sound and sit in the intercoastal with a pair of binoculars, look across that flat, and literally see where all the holes and depressions are, every place where the fish could hang out.
Yeah.
That to me is what that's about. It's getting out there, trying to get it up onto the flats as much as possible so I can see where everything is. And because on high tide, it all looks like water.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it gives you a visual look at the dry land around it to know what your future fishing spots are going to be or future spots to go with your boat without risking damaging the bottom, the seagrass and stuff like that, or your prop.
Well, when I was running charters, and I use my jack plate, and I have a tunnel and all that other kind of stuff, but I would literally take an inch off a stainless steel prop a year. When I would put it in to be rebuilt, it was a 19-inch prop. It was literally down to an 18 when I sent it back in. That's how much was worn off, sanded off, just from sandblasting. That's why jet boats don't work on the flats.
No.
You got to have 3-4 feet of water to run a jet boat, or you're going to just wear the gears out that make the thing go. You'll literally grind the gears up, the sand getting in there, and you don't even have to be digging bottom. It's just a little bit of that blast off of it. It's that constant little bit of sand and just wears that metal right out. So when I'm doing a Lewis and Clark, I like going down the east side, and I want to go in at Pirate Harbor. And I'm going in at dead slow idle, slow as I can go. And I got somebody standing on the boat watching where we're going. And then I'm looking around. And I watch the shoreline for landmarks that I can see to correlate where the holes are going to be. And then I'm going to take my GPS. And whenever I come up, and this is a little deeper spot here. You know, look at that. That's real shallow. It's deeper. I hit the man overboard. And then I can rename it.
No, there you go.
So I hit the MOB, and that gives me an instant waypoint, and then all I have to do is go back and change the name to whatever I want it to. But I use the man overboard to mark that hole. But I back all that up with visual references on land, a marker out there. I want to look and say, okay, I got this tree, maybe that house, and that marker, and I'm kind of triangulated in the middle of that. I like having a physical mark that I can go to, because what happens if my GPS fails? I lose all my spots.
Right, exactly.
So I do a little memorizing for that. I think the GPS should be the backup to your memory, not the memory. It's like, how many people, tell me the phone number of your best friend right now. You're sitting there at home, just recite, tell me the phone number of your best friend. You don't know it. It's in your phone. You hit the button. And if you remember stuff, years ago, all of us remembered 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 telephone numbers. Nowadays, most people don't know two. You just do a little extra memory exercises. Okay, the tree, the house, the marker, then that's where my spot is. Now, I think one of the most critical spots to do this is down on Pine Island Sound. Down by Captiva Rocks. Actually, I would go in right north, the end of Pine Island, and go in at Boquilla. You've got a lot of water to get in there with. Even if you're losing 4 feet of water, you could still get in there.
Right.
And then go and follow that around and see, because Jug Creek Shoals, the Boquilla area, loads up with bait. I mean, that's one of the best spots to catch bait in Southwest Florida. If you know what the bottom contour is like, you're much more likely to catch bait there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
you sound so excited about my observation. That's true, yes. Well, if you're a moron, that was true.
It's winter.
Okay.
It's winter.
I can be a moron and still have a valid point.
Sure, but it's wintertime and there's not that much bait around.
I understand, but what I'm looking for is, okay, I got 4 feet of water, then it jumps up here and it's 2 feet, and then it jumps up here and it's 8 inches, you can literally see the drops on the sandbar, the ledges, the areas, the potholes, where that bait would most likely be when you come back and it's all got 3 feet, 4 feet of water on it.
That's true. Yeah, but you also just to know the contours for the actual ambush points for all of your predators in general, not just the food source.
Yeah, you getting the kind of the hint, boys and girls, that he's placating me like, okay, I sign his paycheck, so he's going to be nice, but he thinks I'm making really stupid points?
No.
I'm convinced this is a paycheck. Paycheck placation? All right. Anyway, whatever the word was, I can't say today. All right. Speaking of tides, red tide.
Yeah, that's great. That's just awesome.
I'm glad you're such a fan. You love that red tide, don't you?
Well, it's frustrating because of many things. You know, the news blows it up to a lot bigger problem than what it really is.
It's Armageddon. But it's the worst thing in history.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the biggest thing is the red tide right now. Yes, it is out there. Yes, it's causing some problems, but it's not massive death and destruction the way it could be.
Now, the only thing that I know of red tide-wise in the area right now is around Gaspereau Island. I was talking to a friend on the way up here. He said, yes, there's still red tide around Little Gasparilla Pass, and Boca Grande Island, Gaspereau Island, on the inside. He's got engine block heaters. He runs an 84-foot boat. And with the motors running to do whatever, usually gets a pile of snook up underneath that boat. He said there was no snook there.
Right.
So they're moving into less bad areas. Red tide does not poison fish. It does not poison anybody. Does not make the meat on the fish bad. It one of the best things or the first reference that anybody's ever heard of written-wise, and it may or may not be true, was when Jesus turned the water to wine, red tide, the water looked red, all the fish floated to the top dead, and everybody got to eat. And that was one of the first cases, or probably known cases, of red tide. And what happened is now it's the same thing. Do not go around pick up dead fish to eat.
No.
But these fish have suffocated. It paralyzes their gills. But if you're walking along the shore, and just because I told you these fish aren't poisonous, and you pick a fish up and you start chewing on it there on the beach, your fault, not mine. I'm telling you not to do it. I'm telling you they're not poisoned. I don't know about bacteria-wise.
Right.
All right, getting into a little bit of other stuff. Any other red tide reports around the area? Just scattered a little bit here, a little bit there?
There's some up in Lemon Bay and right along the beach of Inglewood Beach.
Okay.
You know, it's super faint, minor patches of it. And basically what it boils down to, it's not enough to really kill the fish, but it's just distinct enough to push the fish out of the area.
It's bad enough to kill bait, but not enough to kill adult-sized fish.
I don't know if I'd even go there because, I mean, the fish are moving around, running from it. It's light enough patches where they're sensing it and able to push out of the way because there has been some isolated fish kills, whether it's been bait or larger fish, but it's been very small areas.
Well, for listening to all this nonsense, you've been listening to WKDW Radio 97.5 FM. It's real community radio. And come on, guys, go on to kdwradio.com, click the donation button, a quarter, 50 cents. Robert's worth more than that. I know I'm not, but I'm trying. I should get like a dollar for effort. You should donate at least a dollar for the effort. But, you know, 25, 50 cents, everything helps. You know, Robert might even be worth $4 or $5.
Maybe 10.
Okay. So anyway, getting back into this. We're here at WKDW Radio, 97.5 FM. If you are going to come to Florida, and let's face it, if you're up north, that's pretty bad. I mean, we feel sorry for you. If you're in Wisconsin or Philadelphia or Boston, even South Carolina, if you're one of those Yankees out of South Carolina, you know, those Northerners. Yeah, I love saying that. When you live in this part of Florida, you're the only one in the country who could say, yeah, you Northerners, to somebody in Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So anyway, if you're up there, it's cold, it's miserable. chances are you're not going to be able to get any work done for the next couple weeks with the weather and all that. Come on down to Florida. Robert, what if they're a bass fisherman in Ohio, and let's face it, right now in Ohio, it's miserable. I've been there in the summer. Amazing place, but right now, let's face it, that's a miserable existence in Ohio. So come to Florida. What should a bass fisherman from Ohio bring to Florida?
Yeah, he should bring his bass tackle with him, you know, a 7-foot rod with,
you know, baitcaster or spinning?
Spinning.
Or baitcaster.
They'll both work, but the spinning is more appropriate.
Yeah, the six and one half dozen the other. No, if you're good with a baitcaster, bring it. If you're good with a spinning, bring it.
I disagree with that. Because a spinning reel is a lot more versatile. If I want to throw a light shrimp freelining it, I can still cast it versus a bait caster. You can't very easily and get any distance out of it.
If you're pretty good with it. I mean, you can get away with it. I wouldn't buy...
You asked me what I would bring.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I wouldn't, if you don't have a spinning reel, if you fish all the time with a bait caster, just bring it. It's not worth buying another rod to come down and fish for a week. What you got will work fine. But sure. You don't want the musky size tackle. You want your just regular schoolie bass tackle.
Yes.
You don't, I mean, I would even bring a crappie rod or two. I would bring at least one crappie rod.
Okay. If you want to go crappie fishing.
Well, no. If you're going to fish sea trout with a crappie rod, how much more fun can you get?
Yeah, that can be a blast if you're in a boat.
Okay.
That's a little hard from shore.
All right. Why is it hard from shore?
For most, because you're only using 4-pound test line or 6-pound test line. Fishing from the shore can be a little tricky at times when you're because you are fighting some structure.
All right, I'm going to go with you if I was on a pier or a bridge.
Right.
Anytime I'm up above the water, if I'm fishing on the bank, I'm still okay with the crappie tackle and the 4-pound test. But if you're on a pier, I would say, I'm going to say 10-pound test minimum.
Correct.
On a pier or a bridge or a dock, you're going to use at least 10-pound test.
Yeah. And really all you need for most of it is 10 or 12-pound test, whether you're on a boat from shore or from a pier. You know, that's good basic.
Now, 10 or 12-pound mono or braided?
A mono. Mono is fine. Braid is fine, too. It's a personal preference. I don't think one is necessarily better than the other. They both have their pros and cons, and they both have their better situations.
I'm going to say 15 to 20-pound test in the braid, 10, 15, or 20 on the braid. And that gives you good casting distance. You got plenty of power, good distance. With monofilament, you're still going to need 10-pound, 12-pound test. Anything over 12, you're not really going to get any distance out of it.
No, you lose some of that. And plus, you end up having too big of a reel to cover most of what you're going to be doing anyway.
So I want 10, 15, or 20 in braid, 10 or 12 fish in the piers right now for monofilament, 7-foot medium-heavy rods, a 6 to 12, 8 to 15, 10 to 20-pound. So anything from a 6 to 12 to a 10 to 20. In a 7-foot, medium heavy, medium action rod would be a lot of fun down here.
Yeah, well, it's perfect. I mean, it's perfect for multiple species. You can literally do mangrove snapper, snook, redfish, trout, sheep's head. You know, there's a variety of different species, and that's the main tackle that we use for most of our fish.
The number one lure going on down here right now during this cold weather is a white fluke. 4 to 4.5 inches. 3-aught worm hook, pitch it the way it is, or you can put a weight on in front of it. If you use a very light jig head just to get you a little more distance, like an 1/8 or 1/16 an ounce, but a 4 to 4.5 inch fluke, a split tail, same as you'd use for largemouth.
Yep.
Same bait, exactly the same bait. Now, we usually use the DOA brand, but you can use Bass Assassin, you can use Strike King, Zoom. All those flukes work great. I mean, Gambler's got a great fluke. So anybody who makes a good fluke, you don't have to buy a lot of extra lures to come down and fish down here.
No. And most of your freshwater lures and saltwater lures, the major difference is the hooks.
Pick your best bass lure that you think would work good right now in Charlotte Harbor.
Honestly, I'd be going with the jerkbait, the soft plastic, you know, fluke.
Right. I'm going to go, number one, Storm Twitch Stick. It's a bass lure, but it's the number one salt lure there is. But if I was going to do anything, I'd go to Rattle Trap. And I would slow reel a Rattle Trap because it's noisy. If you reel it nice and slow, just keeping it moving, you're going to catch a lot of fish with a rattle trap here right now.
Absolutely.
That would work. I really think that would be my number one of my, I would have to have my top five. Number one, a minnow spoon, a spoon with a single hook.
Yeah. Yeah. Preferably a gold, maybe a silver, but your daredevils work perfectly fine down here. That's the guys are used to.
Exactly what I was going to say. Why wouldn't you bring your daredevil? Everybody, if you're north of the Mason-Dixon, you have a daredevil in your box.
Oh, yeah.
You got a red and white daredevil. Bring it to Florida. Number one lures in Florida are usually white with a red head. What's a daredevil? Red and white.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it will work perfectly fine for you. You know, so, the only difference is down here, though, is that you will be using a heavier monofilament or fluorocarbon leader.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. 25, 30-pound test fluorocarbon leader, yeah. About 2 to 3 feet of it.
Yeah, a lot of people are used to either using steel leader for their pike or muskie up north, but they think that all of our fish have teeth, which they do, but we're also fighting oysters and barnacles. But your mono or fluorocarbon leader is going to allow your lure to work more naturally. Your bait, if you're using bait, it works a little bit more naturally, but also from a visual standpoint. You know, we're just using it mostly for a light abrasion resistance against oysters and barnacles more
or
than
the mouth
else.
Of the fish.
Yeah.
With a snook, it's all about the wood rasp effect. He's got a lower lip like a wood rasp on it.
Yeah.
Let's see. We've got hula poppers. Rebel poppers and hula poppers are, and head and torpedoes. Those are three lures that trout cannot resist.
Right.
A sea trout, a ladyfish. Sorry. If you're out in the flats and you want to throw a topwater, and you're from Ohio, New York, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, pick a state. Chances are you've either got a head and rebel popper, a head and torpedo, or that...
Jitterbug or hula popper?
Hula popper. Jitterbugs, I'm not sold on. Jitterbug is my all-time favorite topwater for bass. We do contests with those. They're just so awesome in freshwater, but I can't catch fish. The only fish I've ever caught in saltwater on a jitterbug is a mullet.
Really?
I have a picture of it. It was up in the store. I still got it somewhere. And I actually didn't even take it off the hook when I brought it in because the lower lip had one part of the treble, the upper lip had the other part of the treble. He bit it.
No kidding.
And that was a jitterbug. And that's the only fish I've ever caught in saltwater in a jitterbug. I got friends of mine who catch snook steady on jitterbugs.
Yeah, I've caught quite a few snook on jitterbugs.
But for me, I can do hula poppers. I can catch redfish. I can catch snook. Anything on a hula popper. It's such an awesome lure. But if you're coming to Florida, here's my number one rule of traveling, boys and girls. I've been very lucky. I have fished North America, much of Central America. I've fished a lot of Europe. And I would be in that area working, and I'd be there for a week. And we'd work all day. I'd get a little bit of time, go fishing, trying to learn new water, new fish, new lures, knew everything, was just beyond what I could do. I couldn't do it. So what I did was when I went up there, I took the lures I use best, the stuff that works good for me, whether it was saltwater or freshwater, and I would rig it up the way I always do. Most of the time, I outfished the locals. New lures that they probably hadn't seen before. And when I couldn't catch fish, that's when I would go to local knowledge if I wasn't catching fish.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so much of this stuff around here is universal, but also having that stuff that's different than what the fish are used to seeing.
Tell me what the bottom of a spinnerbait looks like in reality. It looks more like a squid than anything else in freshwater. When you have a spinnerbait and you've got that skirt on there, that rubber skirt, that looks more like a squid than it does anything in freshwater.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't resemble any fish that I'm aware of or bait in freshwater.
It remembers some kind of mutant radiation, North Korean spider, maybe. But other than that, I have no idea what the heck it would be.
No, I have no idea either. But it works really well.
All right. Coming around, Speaking of traveling, here's the wonderful news. You're going to come to Florida and visit, because let's face it, if you're not in Florida, the rest of the country is pretty miserable right now. And it's amazing here. I mean, I'm outside in a T-shirt today. This morning, I had the SPF shirt as long underwear, because I don't have long underwear anymore. I use that for long underwear. I got a T-shirt on, I got a sweatshirt, and I got a raincoat on. That keeps me nice and warm. But as we came in, I've got a T-shirt on. No sleeves and a T-shirt. It's awesome here. So here's the best news. You come to Florida. You don't have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go fishing. You get up. You go down to the restaurant. You have some breakfast, nice coffee, waffles, some potatoes, some nice biscuits and gravy, something. And then you go out, get in the boat, and go fishing. Why is that, Robert?
Because of the water temperature and the sun. You know, the early bird doesn't get the worm.
So I'm right, and I got another one good, and yes. You had to go through it. Yes, I did it again.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
So why was I right again, Robert? Feed my ego. Tell me how wonderful I am.
Oh, you've already got that accomplished. The biggest thing is the water temperature. The fish need time to warm up. You know, cold is relative to where you are at, not where you're from, and our fish are semi-tropical. So they do need a little bit of warmer weather or water to get to where they feel that they can feed and actually properly digest their food.
Just like me. I was useless. And then 10 o'clock hit, sun came out, started shining a little bit. All of a sudden the jackets came off and I was building rod racks.
Right, but, exactly.
You know, yeah, before 10 o'clock, I was a mess.
It was pretty darn chilly this morning.
So you know,
that water temperature warms up, the fish start to get active. They start searching out areas to go find food.
I'm going to start getting sympathy emails. You know, frank@fishandfranks.com is my email. No G into fishing, although I'll have that one too here pretty quick. frank@fishandfranks.com. Poor Robert.
Yeah, he's all good.
Just hang in there, buddy. Hang in there. It's only been, 21 years we've been working together?
Be 21 this May.
21 in May. Oh, my God. Everybody wants to know, sheephead, or did I get that wrong?
You got it backwards.
I got it backwards?
Yeah.
Okay, now.
Ours is sheep's head.
We have an S.
Yes.
All right, because the junk fish up north does not have the S.
Correct. Yep, everyone comes down here and thinks that we're funny when we talk about sheep's head fishing, and their fish is called a sheep head. And the biggest difference is ours is actually edible. Yours is more or less fertilizer.
Yeah, well, sheep's head down here is a convict fish. It's stripes. It's amazing eating, wonderful white flaky meat. Kind of a booger to clean, but take your time. You're going to get a beautiful meal out of it. It's absolutely extraordinary. You can cook it in any fashion that you choose. I don't know that there's a bad recipe for sheep head.
Sheep's head.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give you that one. I'll give you that one.
It's confusing to everybody.
I'm going to look it up in a book. But the one up north is no good, and ours is wonderful.
Absolutely.
Just like the weather up north is horrible, and ours is wonderful.
Exactly.
We're just more wonderful. I got to tell you, I just feel that way. Right now, South Florida, the most wonderful place in the world. Well, yes. Maybe not. Tahiti could probably
the United States?
Yeah, okay, but, outside of one or two exceptions, we're the most wonderful state. All right, not North Florida. They don't get a break. All right, sheephead, what's going on? How are you catching them? Where are we catching them?
Well, they love this chillier weather, so they actually feed pretty well most of the time, but they're mainly during the daytime. They are very much an active fish during the daytime versus at night. You'll very seldom ever catch them.
Fishing. I think because they have a pretty good sense of vision, and the only reason there's a lot of sheephead right now is mating, spawning.
Yeah.
So I think they want a good look at that girlfish. I hate to be a little sexist, but, if it's a really pretty little sheephead, he's going to try and get extra food, bulk up, look good for her.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. That's getting a little out there for me. I'm not even going to dwell.
I'm just telling you. I've seen these sheephead. You watch them around the pilings. You know, pretty girl sheephead goes by. The male all puffs up. You know, hey, where's the gym? You know? I mean, so what kind of food does a sheephead want to bulk up on to look good for that potential mate?
Barnacle roids.
Barnacle-roids, okay. So barnacles. Now, when people think of barnacle, they think of this hard, crusty shell. Kind of looks like a mini volcano,
yeah,
for all practical purposes.
Yes. You know, and they feed on those, but they're also feeding on all the little critters that grow and live around the barnacles.
Well, don't they actually feed on the worm inside of that thing? It's like fish don't really want to eat the clam. They want to eat the gooey part inside of the clam, just like we do. Or do they want to eat the whole thing?
No, they eat the gooey part on the inside.
So sheephead aren't really eating the barnacle, volcano-looking hard part.
No.
They're crushing that up to get to the little worm inside.
Yes.
So why wouldn't worms be a good bait for sheephead?
They are good bait. People just don't realize it, except for a handful of the really, really smart guys that have been doing it for years.
I believe I coerced you into that answer, but I'm going to make you stick with it.
No, you set it up that way.
I did.
You know, people don't realize you can use pieces of night crawlers or wigglers and put them on down there next to pilings, and sheephead will eat them pretty regularly.
Now, what I'm looking at is live shrimp or dead shrimp, and how would you hook one, or what would you do with the other one? Is there better, worse, live shrimp or dead?
I would rather use dead shrimp for sheep's head fishing rather than live shrimp because
they're... Explain yourself, young man! Why the dead one?
They're bait thieves, you know. They will steal the shrimp in a heartbeat. So I would prefer to take a frozen shrimp, peel the shell off the tail, and use pieces of that just covering just the barb of my hook and allowing them to take it that way.
So what I do is I peel the shell off a shrimp, take the head off, peel the shell, just like I would if I was going to eat it, including I leave that little bit of the flipper part on the tail. I put my point of my hook in at the very tail, the very back end of the shrimp, threading it on, and when it comes up, the flipper fan part is hiding the eye of my hook. That little circle of the eye of the hook is hidden by that flipper. As you go down, the meat gets thicker, and I bring out just so the point of the hook comes out through that very thick meat on that other end. I don't go from the head towards the tail. I go from the tail towards the head. All that nice soft meat is covered up, covering up that entire hook. And I like the gold hooks. I use that old Mustad gold hook a lot. I love that. But a lot of people are doing circle hooks. My only problem is I can't thread the shrimp on the hook on a circle hook unless it's an offset. And then I'm not sure really working like a circle hook.
Their owner has an offset circle hook that actually I like pretty well for sheep's head fishing.
The
Mutu Light, yeah.
Yeah, that's the same as the VMC's got the same one. I can't remember the name of it right now.
Sure set.
Yeah, the VMC Sure Set. That, try and say that while you're on the radio and not sound, nasty. The VMC and or the owner, both of them are great hooks for that.
Right.
I use the VMC. You like the owner.
I just haven't played with the VMC yet to try it to see if it works any better or not.
Pretty much identical. It's just a lot cheaper. And you know me, I'm just going to save the money. Why right. Spend the money on the owner if I get the exact same thing for less out of the VMC?
Yeah. But, you know, the only difference is between what you're talking about with the shrimp and what I would do is I'd only be using a piece of the shrimp. I wouldn't be threading on the whole shrimp. I'm just going to cover literally just the point of the hook. I'm going to use a piece the size of my pinky or thumbnail.
Now, what I like to do is I like going out to the Gulf. And what do you think the odds of with the red tide? Does red tide affect sand fleas? It doesn't affect shrimp, doesn't affect clams, doesn't affect crabs.
In years past, we've seen a little bit of a correlation with some of the red tide out there with having the lack of sand fleas, but I can't tell you if it does or does not.
We got to look into that because I don't know the answer. All right. And when you don't know the answer, that's really obscure. You're the encyclopedia guy. But sand fleas can be caught easily right along the Gulf of Mexico. Walk right out to where the edge of the water is. And when you're standing on land right at the edge of the water, look, and you're going to see about a 4 to 6 inch drop off right where the waves lap the shore. Put your sand flea scoop, shark's teeth digger, whatever it is, right there on that. Dig down in, bring it up, rinse the sand out, and you should see sand fleas in there. And they're about as big as the end of your little finger and look like a giant white flea. Excellent bait for sheephead. Fiddler crabs are a great bait for sheephead. And small crabs in general, they really seem to like those.
Right. Crabs are a very common food source for them, but the biggest problem is getting them.
Yeah, we're seeing a dramatic decline in the fiddler crab populations. if the state of Florida ever wanted to do something great, they would start growing fiddler crabs, pinfish, stuff like that, so that, you know, we wouldn't be taking the wild stocks. One of the reasons I'm not buying fiddler crabs right now, and I know where there's some in the harbor, I can actually go get probably about 5,000, whatever I want. I won't touch them. That, because I know where there's 5,000. I used to know where there was 30 or 40,000. So, same places. So,
yeah.
I'm not going to take any out of that population, except I'll take a dozen to go fishing with, but I won't take enough to sell. It's not right. I'm going to die poor. I'm not going to die rich. Selling a, you know, another $100 worth of fiddler crabs isn't going to, you know, allow me a Vegas vacation. It's, I'm pretty much here. So, you know, sometimes greed just don't work.
Well, the other thing is that there are other baits that are much more available that work pretty darn close to as well.
I would take a scraper. Now, a sand flea scoop along the piling and rub it up the piling so you slightly break off some of the barnacles. That allows all that food that they dearly love, they're right there trying to eat it, to go into the water and act like chum. Bring your scooper up, take out a couple little soft, gooey pieces of barnacle, any of the whole ones you get up with that, put them on a hook, drop them right back down, you're going to catch sheephead. Don't try and get them all off on the first scrape. Otherwise, you get a big blast of chum, then it's gone. Little bit of scraping. Take a little bit of bait, catch some fish, let it chum, scrape it lightly again. You just need a little bit. You don't need the whole water to go black with it. You know, scrape it off. I can usually scrape a piling 3, 4, 5 times before I have all the barnacles off and the chum is gone. Then I got to move to the next piling. The rumor was the state of Florida wanted people to go sheephead fishing so they get all the pilings cleaned on their bridges. Because when the sheephead aren't good, people start scraping them. They use one of those flat, kind of chisel-like scrapers on
paint
a handle.
Scraper.
Paint scraper, yeah. It's about 4 to 6 inches wide, got a handle on it like a shovel. And you just kind of chop on the barnacles. The problem is, put something under it so some of those barnacles fall in a bin, because if I'm going to chum with barnacles, I want to fish with barnacles. Now, if you're walking down the street, we're walking down, it's a beautiful day like this, it's nice and chilly out, and all of a sudden, you have this smell coming down across the way, and you can smell somebody's cooking a steak on the grill. Oh, and that steak just, I mean, you can tell the fat sizzling, and it's wonderful. It's getting just a little burnt. Does that make you want a hot dog? Is that the thought in your head?
No, I want a chicken sandwich.
Okay, well.
Yeah, and the other question I would have is, you're vegan and somebody cuts the grass, does it make you salivate?
Nice, I like that thought.
I actually would have to say yes, because, you know, unfortunately, I'm from a different era, and I still consume alcohol and nicotine and stuff like that. And I can literally see, you know, somebody mowing the lawn and a vegan just running around the neighborhood going, I'm hungry, I'm hungry.
That's funny.
Awesome. But anyway, my point was, if you smell somebody cooking a steak, it doesn't make you want a hot dog. If you're a vegan smelling grass, that probably makes you want a hamburger. Other than that, you're an idiot. All right. Anyway, so if you're going to chum with barnacles, fish with barnacles for bait.
Sure, absolutely.
If I'm going to chum with shrimp, I'm going to use shrimp for bait.
Yeah, and the main thing is, like what you were talking about, scraping those barnacles, is you're only lightly scraping them. You should not be getting in there like you're a beaver taking apart the piling and destroying it and making it a
the
problem.
What? No.
You got to be careful with those scrapers. You should be just lightly scraping the barnacles off and not being chiseling at it like a beaver.
Oh.
Because you get some guys out there that look like they're using a hatchet on the side of the pilings, and
they clean the whole piling all at once.
Well, they clean
chop
all,
chop,
they,
and
they,
then fish.
But they damage
chop,
the
chop,
piling.
Chop, fish.
They damage the pilings too.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, before they fixed some of those pilings out at Elder Bean, it looked like literally somebody was using a beaver out there right after sheep's head season
with a hatchet on them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're just destroying the pilings, and that creates a problem for all of us, you know, because the county's not going to come in and replace these pilings when you're out there just trying to be cheap and greedy and just butchering pilings.
Well, with as cold as it is, there's a lot of references to snowflakes nowadays. And the one thing you snowflakes and snowflakers should learn tax money's not free. It's actually your money that somebody else is telling you how they are going to spend it. So when you're damaging public property and all that, and then we rely on the government to fix it, it's still my money, your money. Snowflake, wake up. There's no such thing as a free anything. You got to pay for it one way or another. Best thing to do is take care of public property. Watch yourself. Don't destroy anything. And maybe we don't have to spend so much money in taxes if we would all just take care of ourselves and the public property and the environment. Just do a little less damage, and we wouldn't have to spend so much money in taxes. Because I can tell you, I have yet to see a government that actually spends money wisely. I mean, if you can point out how the government's spending money wisely, I'll buy you some shrimp.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, anyway, or let's say if you can tell me 2-1 or 50-50. All right, anyway, Cayley hooks, our last little bit. Why a Cayley hook and why not a J hook or a circle hook? What's up with Cayley hooks?
I think they're probably one of the most amazing hooks around. You showed those to me 20 years ago. You know, they're basically a wide gap, kind of a cross between a J hook and a circle hook. You know, a lot of people are familiar with using them up north for shiner and minnow fishing. Well, flounder
is the original way they come from.
And walleye fishing, too.
But bass fishermen use them for shiners. Mm-hmm. And I use them anytime I'm using a bait under a bobber. It's still one of the best hooks in the world. They hook through the side of the upper jaw almost every time, more often than a circle hook, and you can set it or not set it.
Right. So if you got experienced or beginner anglers, you know, you can simply reel or cast it, you know, or set the hook, and you really can't go wrong with it.
No, and what I like is, you know, most fish are right-handed.
That's true.
Most fish are right-handed. You don't believe me, watch. And when you have a Cayley hook, does the fish turn right or left when he hits? Turns left. Right-handed fish would go to the left or go to the right?
Clockwise.
Clockwise. Is it going to go around this way? Because mm-hmm. that's why it's usually hooked in this mm-hmm. inside corner of the mouth, because yep. he's turning that. All right, so the fish comes up.
Even flounder. You look at flounder. There's right-handed flounder and left-handed flounder. As far as the way their eyes are proportioned. And the percentage is almost the exact same as in humans. More right-handers than there are left-handers.
And for good reason, I might add.
Right?
I'm married to one. I know there's a reason. Okay, so there should only be so many left-handed people left. When the fish comes up to it, they swing around and they go to the right, hooks in the right corner of the mouth because they're pulling away with it. Every once in a while, you'll see the fish hooked in the left corner of the mouth, and you can literally tell if they're right or left-handed when you're using a bait below a bobber, like a shrimp. I take the Cayley hook, and if I'm using regulars or modest-sized shrimp, I'm using a number 4 to number 2. And I'm going in one side of the head and out the other, kind of just under the horn. I want just a little bit of the hook, not a lot of hook into the shrimp. I don't have to go deep. And then when the fish hits, you see the right swirl to it. Sometimes they swirl the other way. They hook in the other corner of the mouth. The nice part about it is they never go down into the fish's throat. They stay right there where they belong. And that's true just almost 100% of the time. It's literally an amazing hook to use. Not as good bottom fishing with it, though. Under a bobber, anytime like that, I think it's the most awesome hook I've ever gone. 50-50 once I get off the bobbers. If I'm not using a float, I go back to J hooks or something else.
Yeah, I mean, I've honestly never tried it right on the bottom. I've always been using it under a float of some kind.
The only time I like it, I take a little number 6 Cayley hook, a Mustad 30, I think it's a 37-140, a number 6, when we have those little tiny shrimp in the mm-hmm. summertime, that little number 6 hook, I can freeline that out, bottom fish with it, top fish with it. I catch a lot of redfish that way. Right now, I bet you if I took the tiny little shrimp with that little number 6 Cayley hook, I bet you I could catch redfish with it, because this cold weather, their stomach just does not want to digest food.
Correct.
It's too cold. They can't generate the heat for the digestion, so the food could rot in their stomach. So they're going to eat little tiny, tiny baits.
Yeah.
They're not going to eat big stuff. I'm going to catch 6 reds to 1 on a 1.5-inch long shrimp than I will on a 4-inch shrimp.
Yeah, that's true.
So, well, this is Fish and Frank. We're at WKDW Radio, 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio. Robert, right, any final Northport words?
No. I'm glad we made it through the new year so far.
Yeah, New Year's not looking too bad?
No, it's actually looking pretty good. It's going to be a heck of a lot better than last year.
Yeah. So, although December ended up pretty good. It was a nice. November was good. December was good. Thank you all so much for supporting us in our store at Fish and Frank's. WKDW Radio 97.5, Real Community Radio out of Northport, Florida. And we're broadcasting to Arcadia because I got friends who live there and they tell me they love the show. And Englewood, Port Charlotte, all over the place. Listen to WKDW Radio. If you can't hear it real clear, go to kdwradio.com. This place is awesome, man. Come to Common Grounds on Wednesday night, too, by the way. It's right here at the studio.
Okay, I got you.